talk about. We'll kind of shift gears. Last week we were talking about Paul and how he went from Damascus down to Jerusalem. Today we're going to pick up with Peter. If you probably noticed that the book of Acts is largely a discussion of the activities of just those two men, Peter or Paul. And we're at the point now in Acts 9 where we're going to begin to transition from Peter as being the primary actor to Paul as being the primary actor. But at this point, the ninth chapter is one of those odd chapters because it talks about both of these people, but it's like parallel play. You have Paul doing one thing, you have Peter doing something else. So today we'll take up with Peter and we'll talk about his activities for just a minute. Let's begin with a prayer before we get started. God, thank you for everything that you do for us, for watching over us, keeping us safe. Thank you for giving us this time when we can come together and we can consider the history of your people. We do this because it helps us to understand the things that we will face as we go about living the kind of life that you want us to live. So help us to understand, help us to see the point, and we will always give you the glory. In Jesus' name, amen. I don't know how many people have been doing their chronological Bible reading this year, but if you've been doing the chronological Bible reading, you may have been impressed that sometimes there's an awful lot of detail that's given and you don't really know why you got all of that detail. Sometimes you can kind of think about it long enough and you can come up with a reason why the detail is there. And sometimes you look at it and you just think, I have no idea why I have the names of all of the spies that went into Canaan. Can't tell you that. So today we're going to talk about some more detail. And I'm not sure why we have this detail. We're going to talk about Peter and two events that happened, one in Lydda and one in Joppa. So this is a picture of where these cities are in relationship to Jerusalem. Now remember, God has told the apostles, I want you to teach the gospel first in Jerusalem, then in Judea, then in Samaria, and then to the uttermost part of the earth. And that's what we've seen happening. It started in Jerusalem. There was persecution. The Christians went out from Jerusalem, started to impact Judea. Then they went to Samaria, and then they went to the uttermost parts of the earth. All of that is important because as you see Christianity start to expand out from Jerusalem, they start encountering and dealing with a lot of racial animus. We've seen that consistently. This racial kind of division in Jerusalem dates all the way back to the Assyrian captivity, when the northern 10 tribes separated from the southern 2 tribes. The northern 10 tribes, by and large, rejected God. Okay? Rehoboam was not the best king. And because they rejected God, for the most part, they wound up going into Assyrian captivity. Now, when they went into Assyrian captivity, the northern 10 tribes typically intermarry with the people where they found themselves. And you lost the purity of the Jewish line. And that had been a big deal. And you can understand why. Think back to Genesis 12, God's threefold promise to Abraham, I'll make you a great nation, I'll give you the land, and in your seed all families of the earth will be blessed. So this idea of a pure Jewish line was really important. But anyway, Israel, that's the northern 10 tribes, okay? They go into Assyrian captivity and they start to intermarry. And that intermarriage and the fact that they sort of adopted the rules and mores of the place where they lived, they became the Samaritans for the most part. Now, the Samaritans then are Jewish connected, but they haven't maintained this pure line. Okay? Then you had the Babylonian captivity. The southern two tribes, Judah, didn't do a whole lot better as far as following God. They persisted for a time, but then they went into Babylonian captivity. They stayed in Babylon for 70 years, and then God brought them back. Cyrus the Mede freed all of the people that he had kind of inherited from Babylon. The Medes and the Persians defeated Babylon. And when they defeated Babylon, they inherited the people that Babylon had enslaved. And one of the groups of people that they inherited was the Jews. So Cyrus says, you can go back home. And they did. That's the return, the end of 70 years. It was, now, of course, it was controlled by God, but they get to return under Zerubbabel and Ezra, and they rebuild the city and they become a nation again. Now, when Cyrus said you could go back home, not everybody went. Oh, you can imagine what kind of tension that created. Then you had three groups of people. You had the people that had always been in Jerusalem, because the Babylonians didn't carry off everybody. They just took the best of the best, for the most part. So you had a lot of people that were still in Jerusalem, and they were thinking, oh, we are more righteous than you were because you got carried off. Okay. Then you had the group that was carried to Babylon, and they came back. And their feeling was, we really care about God because we left our home. They had established a home in Babylon. We left our home in Babylon and we went back to Jerusalem. Jerusalem was in ruins and we rebuilt it. We care about God. But they get back and then there's the tension between the two groups that are there. Okay. Then you had the third group. This third group didn't go back. They decided to stay in Babylon. And you can imagine the tension that that created. What, you don't care about God? You don't want to go back? You're too soft? You don't want to do the hard work of rebuilding Jerusalem? Yeah, you can hear all of the things that they were saying. So you've got... Within Judaism, this is just within Judaism, you've got these terrible divisions. And this group that didn't go back, they kind of morphed into what we encounter in the New Testament, the Hellenists. Okay? They were willing to go anywhere, live anywhere, and they did. They went throughout the Greek Empire. They went to Athens. They went to, you find them in Rome. The Jews went all over the place. Well, these Hellenists didn't, there were four distinctive features about them. They didn't circumcise their sons. They tended to give their sons non-Hebrew names. So they would give a name like Timotheus instead of a good name like Jeremiah. Okay. They didn't speak Hebrew. And this was a big deal. Sometimes they understood Hebrew, but they didn't speak it well. The Jews that lived in Jerusalem spoke Hebrew. It was more than just the official language. That's what they spoke. So if you lived in say, Greece, you were growing up, you're a boy, and you learn in synagogue how to read Hebrew and how to speak Hebrew. Just like I went to, you know, to high school, and for 4 years I studied Latin. I studied a dead language. Okay. Maybe that wasn't the best language for me to study, but I spent 4 years studying Latin. Okay. And I know the rules. I can conjugate verbs. I know all the verb endings. In fact, I'm such a nerd that we used to go to football games and sit in the stands and yell, O-S-T, mustis N-T. That was the way to remember how to conjugate a verb. Now I can't remember it. But we used to cheer these things. But I couldn't speak Latin. I could read it a little bit. I had to translate Caesar's Gallic Wars. But I was like one of those kids that studied Latin, but I didn't really get it. Okay. So if you were a native Latin speaker and you encountered me, you would know immediately, oh, he's just got book Latin. Well, they knew the same thing about these Hellenists, the Jews that lived in Jerusalem. They spoke Yiddish. They spoke Hebrew. Okay. And so you'd get this other Jew that came from Babylon, and he knows how to talk. If you ask him, what's your name in Hebrew, he could tell you his name in Hebrew. Okay. How old are you? He could say, where's the bathroom? The normal phrases that you learn in school. But he just wasn't Jewish. Okay. So here you have Peter. And Peter is going to go from Jerusalem up to Lydda, and he's going to encounter somebody there. Now, you have to understand, there weren't a lot of roads back then. Okay, so Peter's been up in Samaria with Stephen, or with Philip. He's been preaching up there. And after he's up in Samaria, you can see where that is on the map. Samaria is up here. He's been in Jerusalem, but he's up here now. In order for him to get to Lydda, he has to go back down this road, and that road puts him down at Jerusalem, down here. And then he wants to go to Lydda. Lydda's way over there. So it's like you can't get to Lydda from Samaria. Have you ever gone from Spokane to Eugene? You can't get from Spokane to Eugene. You have to go due south, then turn due west, then turn due south. And you get the feeling, if I could just cut the corner, you know, go like the crow flies, I could do this a lot faster, but you can't. So the fact that Peter goes from Samaria down to Jerusalem, then over to Lydda, I don't know that that's important, but I do know this. Peter has some Jews with him a little bit later. I think he picked them up while he was down in Jerusalem. I don't know that for sure. It just makes sense. So you understand a little bit about what's going on. And now we're going to read about two events, one that happens at Lydda. Then we're going to read about something that happens in Joppa. And then a little bit later, we're going to see Peter go up to Caesarea, way up north on the coast. Okay. So let's talk about what happens at Lydda. He encounters this person who is named Aeneas. What would you think? Does that sound Hebrew or Greek? Does that sound like the names you've been reading in the Old Testament? No. This guy is probably a Hellenist. Aeneas is a Greek name. Okay. Now, Peter is starting to encounter this racial animosity, because he's going to see Aeneas. He's probably a Hellenist. He's not a Hebrew of the Hebrews, like Paul said of himself later. Aeneas probably didn't speak Hebrew. And so Peter goes through these parts and he gets to Lydda. Now, who would like to read starting in verse 32 down through verse 35? I have it there on the screen. Can I get somebody to read that?
And it came to pass, as Peter passed throughout all quarters, he came down also to the saints which dwelt at Lydda. And there he found a certain man named Aeneas, which had kept his bed 8 years and was sick of the palsy. And Peter said unto him, Aeneas, Jesus Christ maketh thee whole. Arise and make thy bed. And he rose immediately. And all that dwelt at Lydda and Saron saw him and turned to the Lord.
Thank you. So what do you see is really important here?
Say it again, one more question.
Well, put that in your own words. Stress the things you see are important.
The fact that he just simply spoke, and that he healed other people by just simply speaking in the name of the Lord.
Very good.
Very miracle.
Yeah.
Power.
Absolutely a miracle.
Okay. We don't see this today.
You see people that claim they're doing miracles, but you don't see miracles like this. Okay. The miracles that people do today are not like these miracles. Those miracles were easily confirmed.
Correct.
You had, you know, Jesus raising Lazarus after he's been dead for 4 days. That's not the kind of stuff people do today. What they do today is, I think it's just fake miracles. I think it's just sleight of hand. And sometimes I think it's outright lies. I've told the story before about a friend of ours who was deaf. Family of one of the elders where I was preaching at the time. And they were over at our house and we were watching this guy that claimed to be a faith healer. He was on TV. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say that something that is natural, that it happens naturally, can be explained. A miracle can't be explained. His palsy being healed like that, that's a miracle. That's an act of God.
Yeah.
Not something that it can naturally be explained. That he rested for a while, he ate this herb or this plant or doctor, and it healed a certain way over time. That's explained like natural.
Yeah, that's something we have to remember about miracles too.
So people are like saved today from say surgery or something like that. So it's a miracle. It's like that process. God definitely blessed the situation, but it was naturally.
Yeah, I don't think it was a miracle. If I look at, my daughters were born and I was in the delivery room and I looked at that and I'm thinking, this is a miracle. No miracle about that. Baby's been born that way for a long time. It is truly amazing. Don't get me wrong, but it's just the way things happen. Okay. I had a heart attack, went to the doctor, they did surgery on me, I got better. I think that's a miracle. But no, it's not a miracle. He knew where the blocked artery was, and he cut into my chest, and he fixed that blocked artery, and lo and behold, I got better. Yeah, well, I think there's God's hand is there, okay? But that's not a miracle. And some miracles are just lies. I was back to my story. Two people over at my house that were watching this guy who claims that he can heal deaf people. So this couple of people come up on the stage and he licked his fingers, put his fingers in their ears and went like that. And he said, "They can hear." And the people said, "I can hear." And I look at that and think, wow, that's a miracle. My deaf friends looked at that and said, nope, they're still just as deaf as they were when they started. Now, how come I can get so deceived by that? Because I don't know what deaf people look like. But if you're deaf, you know. Immediately, when you meet somebody, you know that person's deaf. And that's okay. That's just something that you know. Okay? I can get fooled. I don't want to be cynical, but I try to be discriminating about what I believe. But there's a lot of things I don't know. This guy, Aeneas, he's been palsied for 8 years. I don't know exactly what palsy was. Yeah.
We also want to believe in miracles, even today. If we come across someone like your grandson, that he could be made whole. That's what we all wish for.
Oh, undeniable. Undeniable. And my granddaughter that we lost. You know, I can tell you, Ted and Mandy would give their left, they'd give anything if they'd been able to heal that little girl. Okay. And did I pray for a miracle? I prayed for a healing. And it would have been an amazing thing. And the doctors did some incredible stuff. But those doctors were working like crazy. It wasn't a miracle. Okay. But he heals him. My mother used to actually quote this passage to me. She said, "Arise, make thy bed." So Sharon is what they called that area over where Lydda was. That was the country, the county of Sharon or something like that. That was the region. That's what they called it. So back to this story. Peter sees this man. He's a Hellenist. He's not a real Jew. Okay? Yeah, that's the way they thought. He's not a real Jew. But Peter heals him. Now, let's continue. From Aeneas in Lydda, Peter keeps going, keeps traveling. Can I get somebody to read 36 through 38?
Now in Joppa, there was a certain disciple named Tabitha, which translated in Greek of Joppa. This woman was abounding with patient kindness and charity, and she continued to do it. It came about at that time that she fell sick and died, and when they had washed her body, they laid it on the grave. And since Lydda was near Joppa, the disciples, having heard that he was there, sent two men to him. Entering him, treating him to do not lay attention.
Okay. In your own words, what's this telling you? Okay. They were grieving. And they were grieving because this was a good woman. She was a Christian. And you know, sometimes we think it's inappropriate for Christians to grieve when they lose someone. Then that's not really true. What they did was they showed Peter the coats that she'd made, all the good deeds that she'd been involved in doing. We'll read that in just a minute. But what do you see in this name? Her name is Tabitha. Or in the Greek, Dorcas. What's that tell you? Jews, real Jews, would never have translated the name into Greek. This is, again, evidence that we're seeing some tension. Remember what happened with the translation of the Septuagint version. The real Jews rejected the Septuagint because it had been translated into Greek. And that they never would have done that. So this woman, her name is Tabitha, there's her Hebrew name. But they called her Dorcas. Oh, good grief. So let's go. 39 through 41. Can I get somebody to read that?
Peter rose and met with them. They caught him in the hand and helped him to speak to him, showing the coats and garments which were while she was with him. Peter put them also, and kneeled down to her. Turning to the side, he said, Tabitha, arise. She opened her eyes, and she saw Peter, she said. And he gave her his hand and raised her up, calling the same to her, who presented her alone.
What do you, in your own words, what happened here?
Definitely a miracle.
Yeah.
Wonderful. She was healed right away. 5 days later,
Yeah, this woman is, she is a good woman. They showed Peter the coats that she'd made. So she's apparently a pretty good seamstress. And you know, we have a tendency to denigrate, to not treat as highly as we ought to treat people who do this kind of thing. We think, well, that's not a big deal, you know. She never preached, and she wasn't an elder, and she didn't teach. She didn't do all those kinds of things. All she did was make coats. But that tells you how important this was. Okay. Had a Christian friend up in Alaska who he was incredibly, painfully shy. But whenever anybody needed a coat, he bought them one. And you think, well, that's not a big deal, but it is. That's a big deal. And we're going to talk a little bit about that today. So Peter puts them all out, kneels down, prayed, said, "Tabitha, arise." And it became known throughout all Joppa, and many believed on the Lord. Came to pass that as he abode many days in Joppa with Simon a tanner. So we got Peter's in Simon's house up in Joppa. He's staying with this tanner, and we're going to see what happens next week. But at this point, once the miracle happens, what's the effect? Yeah, they talked about it, and people were coming to God. They could see these miracles being done. Do you think any of those people came to God just because of the miracles? Now remember what's happened with Jesus. You know, he's going about. He's feeding 5,000, he feeds 3,000. Did any of those people just come for the food? Well, Jesus says they did. You know, you just came for the food. Did any of those people that were responding then probably respond just because of what they were seeing, these miracles? Probably, I don't know. It doesn't say, but we know something about human nature, and we know that happened even with Jesus. That's probably still going to happen. So what do we do when we look around and we say, well, there are some people that are here just because of the miracles? Now, we don't have miracles, okay? But we do have a close connection with each other. And there are people who would be associated with Christianity just because they see this wonderful association that people have. And they would give anything to have that kind of friends, that kind of association. And they associate with Christianity based largely on just wanting that friendship. So what do we do?
Dean, isn't that how we kind of spread the word through us, how we act and what we believe as disciples? And we're sent here to preach, but to emulate Jesus. And so we express that in what we say and how we do, and that we just keep doing. If people like what they see, then that's not a bad thing. And so we just...
I agree. Do you think there were people that came just because they thought they could get a free coat? Yeah, Jane. Right. And sometimes there will be people associated with Christians that really don't believe. They're just there for maybe the wrong reason. Yeah, John.
Yes, I mean, but so 1 Peter 3:15, but sanctify the Lord God in your hearts and be ready always to give an answer to every man that asks you a reason of the hope that is in you with meekness and fear.
So yeah.
Hope, you have, obviously, that hope is an outward, is an outward expression for outward coming from you. That
right. Right. And one of the things that happens is when people ask us a question and our response is, you know, you have something that's very, really special and I would like to have that. What's our response? Hey, the reason we have that is Jesus. So we always have to get back to Jesus.
Planting and watering.
That's right. It's planting and watering. It's we're going to attract some people that really don't want Jesus. They want they want the side effects. Okay. But they really don't want Jesus. And yeah, go ahead.
In terms of planting and watering, they may have interaction with us as a group or you or me. But they may move somewhere in Ohio or whatever, and God will give them peace there. That doesn't make us any less involved in that process as the body.
That's a good point.
As the body,
yeah. That's a good point. Yeah, Linda.
I can't say that if I have an association with someone that they don't want Jesus, but they have a curiosity about what I am giving out, so they keep coming back for the same kind of friendship. And I think that in itself is working, makes something different to them, because my mind is, I'm praying for them to come to Jesus because I love it.
Right. Right. Good point. And to John's point, if people are attracted to us and we are able to present them with Jesus, it may be that they leave and go to a different place. That's not a loss at all, you know. I'm sure that the church in Nevada hated to see John and Denise leave. Okay. And that's the way it should be. We get close to each other. And we embrace each other, and people will leave. And who knows? Maybe they'll come back like John and Karen did. You know, they go all the way down to you guys were in Klamath, right? Or, yeah, you spent time in Roseburg.
Pretty
well-traveled. Yeah. They can't maintain friendships, guys. I'm just teasing you, John. And they come back here, and we're excited. Okay? I think about it from the vantage point of Klamath, and it's like, oh, John and Karen, we've lost John and Karen. And they come here, and we're like, yay, we got John and Karen. So that kind of thing happens. And part of what that indicates is we have to have a broader view of the saints than Coburg Road.
Dean?
Okay. Yeah.
We have to remember God gives the increase, and people always have a tendency to not count the cost. Many people. So they look at it, they value it, they see that it's valued, but they don't count the cost. And so somebody might say, oh, you like to go fishing. And so they go out and they buy the fishing license and they buy all the equipment. And they go out there and they can't figure out how to catch any fish. And they go, oh, I don't like fishing. They like all the stories and everything that went with it. But when they finally counted the cost, they just couldn't follow through.
That's a good point. That's a good. What happened in John 6? Does anybody remember what happens in John 6? That's a turning point in Jesus' ministry. Six, down towards the end, people had been coming to Jesus in droves. There were huge crowds with him. And then all of a sudden, they weren't there anymore. So much so that Jesus actually, in John 6, says to his disciples, are you going to go away too? Down towards the end? How disappointing that must have been from Jesus' perspective. You know, people are coming, they're learning about God, and then all of a sudden they're not. That's really hard to watch. It's really hard to remind yourself that what's important is teaching people about God. And there are going to be some committed people, and there are going to be some people that aren't committed, and they're just not going to stick with it. Don't be dissuaded by people that don't stick with it. That's true. That's true. We're not driving them away.
But
now, it's a good point. That's a very good point. We're not driving them away. Okay? I would never want to get to the point where I drove somebody away because I was convinced you're not as committed as I am. That's kind of like getting back to Jews who came back to Jerusalem, who were ready to rebuild it, and they didn't want the people who weren't as committed as they were to enjoy the blessings. Okay, so we don't ever want to get to that point. We just always want to be excited about the fact that we're doing good. And yeah, some people came just to get a coat. That's okay. That's okay.
Well, we have to be careful.
That's true. That's true. It's a little deflating when you don't draw a crowd, but that's okay. Yeah, Kim.
We have to be careful that we're not judging people's motives. Jesus said you came just for the food, even their hearts. He knew, but we don't always know.
Nope.
We may assume that someone isn't as committed or isn't as invested in Jesus, and our job is just to bless them, to figure out a way to share Jesus with other people, regardless of what their motive is, and regardless of what's going on. Our duty as Christ followers is to share him with them and be a blessing to them. I can't judge your motive. I don't know why you're here or not. So we're going to put that out there. But Jesus did know their motives.
Yeah.
If someone comes to Dorcas and gets a coat, perhaps, I don't know, but she blessed them.
Did some people come just because they thought they could be healed?
Sure.
Probably. And my response to that is, that's okay. It's okay. I don't have some sort of a test that I give. When you come through the door, I want to know if you're really committed. So, but that has been the case at times in the past. Yeah, Anne?
Chapter number 2, the person who believes every time they look at that post, the one
that's right. And every time they wear that coat out in public, somebody's going to ask them, where'd you get that coat? Okay. Good point. Good discussion. Good discussion. I appreciate everybody being here. Next week, prepare for Acts 10. And this is in the whole scheme of things. This is major change. We're about somewhere between 8 and 10 years after the church started. Pentecost. We remember Acts 2. We're about 8 to 10 years, and Acts 10 is going to be a major, major change. So we'll take that up. Lenny will take that up next week. He'll be back. Thank you for your participation. Good to see everybody this morning. To see everybody this morning. To see everybody this morning. To see everybody this morning.